today on Straight Talk Africa, the Olympic Games and Africa. We reflect on the politics and analyze the African accomplishments and setbacks in Rio. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, August 24th. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to you, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners, and especially the sports fans on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we reflect on the politics and analysis of the African accomplishments in Rio.
And sports fans, many of you didn't make it to the Brazilian capital, but you were watching very closely and had a lot to say on the performances of the athletes represented. Coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share your thoughts through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. That's ahead on Straight Talk Africa. Hope you'll stay with us.
But first, like it or not, the Olympic Games are not a political. My colleague, Paul Sisco, has more on the story.
The spectacle in Rio is over. The torch is being passed on to Tokyo for the 2020 Summer Olympic Games. Despite Zika, pollution, infrastructure problems, crime, corruption, and political concerns, Rio has pulled it off with fun, flair, and great success. Most of the 11,000 athletes from 206 competing countries have returned home. The games of the 31st Olympiad were remarkably buoyant and problem-free. Americans are understandably proud of their world-leading 121 medals, proud of their U.S. record-tying 46 golds, and proud of their returning athletes, more proud of some than others. Michael Phelps led the way with 6 individual medals, 5 gold and a silver.
After 5 Olympics, the most decorated Olympian of all time says he's retiring.
He does so with 28 total medals, 23 of them gold. Swimmer Katie Ledecky and gymnast Simone Biles were next in Rio, each with 5 medals, all but one of them gold. China was second in overall medals with 70, 26 gold. Great Britain third at 67 medals, 27 gold.
Russia with 56 medals, 19 gold.
The Olympics are often as much about politics as sport. Few athletes ever combined the two as powerfully as African Americans Tommy Smith and John Carlos at the 1968 Summer Olympics in Mexico City, remembered for their stunning, silent, power to the people protest salute. 4 years later in Munich, 11 Israeli athletes and coaches were murdered. 5 Palestinian terrorists also died.
The Munich massacre was the worst attack in the history of the Olympic Games. Deborah Luderbeck.
In 1976, 22 African countries pulled out of the Montreal Summer Games in protest of the New Zealand Rugby Union's tour of apartheid South Africa. 1980, the U.S. boycotted the Summer Games over Russia's invasion of Afghanistan. The Soviet Union countered 4 years later, boycotting the 1984 Games in Los Angeles. The 1996 Summer Olympics were marred by bombings in Atlanta's Centennial Olympic Park. In Rio, Ethiopia's Faisha Laisha protested by crossing his hands above his head while approaching the finish line of the marathon, where he won a silver medal. He did so to call out on behalf of his fellow Oromo people, who have suffered brutal police crackdowns in Ethiopia. He is now seeking asylum, fearful of returning home. Kenya fared best of all African nations with 13 medals, 6 gold. Eliud Kipchoge won the men's marathon, and Kenyan Jemima Sumgong the woman's. South Africa won 10 Olympic medals, 2 gold. 2 world records were set in Rio, South Africa's Wade van Niekerk in the 400-meter race, and Ethiopia's Almaz Ayana shattered the world record in the 10,000-meter race. Ethiopia, 8 total medals, 1 gold. The Ivory Coast, 2, 1 gold. Niger, 1 medal. Burundi, 1 medal. And Nigeria, 1 medal, its men's football team proudly taking home a bronze. The first ever refugee team was a fan favorite in Rio, made up of athletes from the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ethiopia, South Sudan, and Syria. Finally, from the African diaspora, always well represented in the Olympics, Mo Farah won the gold for Britain in the 5,000 and 10,000 meter races, matching his 2012 success at the London Games. And the fastest man alive, Jamaica's Usain Bolt, was a stunning 3-for-3, winning gold in the 100 meter, the 200 meter, and as anchor in the 4x100 relay. Rio was most likely the last Olympiad for the Lightning Bolt. Farah has not ruled out running the marathon at the 2020 Tokyo Summer Games. Paul Sisko, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Joining us here in the Washington studios is my colleague, Sunny Young himself, host of VOA's Sunny Side of Sports. Well, what can I say? It's always a pleasure, of course, having the opportunity to host you in Studio 52.
Shaka, it's always a thrill to be on Straight Talk Africa, with especially with you.
You're most welcome. Come again. And Henok Gabisa, visiting academic fellow, Washington and Lee University School of Law. He joins us via Skype from Lexington in the U.S. state of Virginia. Well, Henok, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much. It's an humble, it's a privilege to be here.
You're most welcome. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. Let me come back to you immediately, Sunny Young. The games are over. Let the games start. But the games are over, Sunny. What was your most significant impression, really?
I think Paul Sisko mentioned it in his piece that there were a lot of question marks about the games beforehand, whether Rio could pull them off. Mm-hmm. You know, questions about Zika, pollution, political instability, polluted waters.
And you know, of course, they do have a suspended president.
That's true.
Dilma Rousseff.
But I think the sporting achievements and action in Rio helped gloss over maybe some of the problems in Brazil. You know, we saw in that opening package Michael Phelps and Usain Bolt, a couple of the world record holders from Africa. There were some spectacular performances in Rio that really, I didn't expect them. I certainly didn't expect Phelps to perform as well as he did. I thought he would bow out quietly, mm-hmm. but he still wanted the spotlight on him, the most decorated Olympian of all time.
What was interesting specifically about Michael Phelps, of course, was the upset by a very young man from Singapore, who happens to be, in fact, one of his ardent fans. He pretty much learned swimming, frankly, watching Michael Phelps via YouTube. And they took a very interesting picture.
I guess as a youngster, he, like you said, idolized Phelps, and then he races him at the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And one of the great moments in Rio, for sure, Shaka. I think, you know, Phelps, he was admired by so many Olympians, not just here in the USA, but around the world. And so this his last Olympics, he says it's his last Olympics. I'm sure he got photographed a lot at the Athletes Village by various Olympians from everywhere.
What about Brazil? Of course, you know as well as I do that Brazil happens to be football crazy. And for the first time in the history, frankly, of their nation, they were able to win the big one in the Maracana Stadium. The sure. big one, and of course, guess what? Against Germany.
Sweet retribution for the Brazilians. I was surprised when I was going through my Olympic history books that Brazil had never won the gold medal in Olympic men's football. And as you pointed out, Germany ends up being their final opponent at the Maracanã Stadium. If we go back 2 years, Shaka, to the 2014 World Cup, the Germans, a blitzkrieg, trounced Brazil 7-1 in one of the semifinal matches. And I know many Brazilians consider that really the low point in their footballing history. So I think by winning the gold medal at Maracanã and Neymar, arguably the biggest soccer star in Brazil, he scores the winning penalty kick against the Germans. So, yeah, I think if they wanted to win any medal during the Rio Games, they wanted that men's football medal probably more than any other.
Now that they have won the big one in the Maracanã Stadium, does this mean that the monkey is off their back? Because, Sunny, you remember back in 1958, when they hosted the World Cup itself, they were beaten by little Uruguay, 2-1.
Well, that's a good point. I don't know if the monkey is quite off their back yet, because Olympic football, I don't think it has quite the stature or pedigree as World Cup football. It's played primarily by players 23 and under, although during the Olympics you're allowed to have three players over the age of 23. Neymar was one of the three. He's 24, but
he's
one of the players for Brazil, one of the overage players. But I think it was still quite an accomplishment for Brazil to win gold in men's football. And just to see the cheering fans afterwards, that was the medal they really wanted.
What if it had gone the other way? What would have happened? Because let's face it, the Germans had already won the women's football final gold medal.
I think there would be a lot of very unhappy Brazilians, Shaka, if Germany had swept the two soccer medals in Rio. But yeah, I give credit to the Germans. They are always there or thereabouts when it comes to the medal rounds in these international competitions. And they played great. Quick note about Nigeria. They won the bronze medal in men's football. I think preparation, Shaka,
yes,
really plays a key role in how an athlete or team performs on the international stage. And there were a lot of doubts whether the Nigerian team would even make it to Brazil for their opening match. I think they arrived about 6 hours before their opening game against Japan in Manaus because of travel snafus. And so to make it to, you know, I think Nigerians, they wanted the gold, but it was kind of sad to see them stuck in Atlanta, of all places.
Very, very ironic, especially given, frankly, that if I am right, that is where they first and last won an Olympic gold medal back in 1996.
You are correct. They won their only gold in Atlanta in 96, 20 years ago. And now, you know, I'm happy they got the bronze, but I think most Nigerians wanted more than the bronze.
They definitely did. I mean, when you think about the population, you're talking about Africa's most populous nation. Conservatively, the population is supposed to be estimated around 100, perhaps 75 million human beings. Some others say could in fact be around 200 million people. And you just bring home a bronze medal?
Well, another story dealing with Nigerian preparation, Shaka, the official team uniform for the Nigerian Olympic team didn't arrive in Rio for the athletes until the games were more than half over. I think it was at least 10 days into the Rio games that the official uniform arrived. And I think that symbolically really kind of shows the poor preparation by Nigeria for the Rio Olympics.
And by no means, by the way, is it really limited to the Nigerian team, because it seems to be spread across the continent, really.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it, I think, is linked to finances, Shaka. A lot of these Olympic teams in Africa rely on government money to travel for equipment purposes. And so that maybe they're not being backed financially as well as they could. But typically, the best performing athletes and teams acclimate a little bit before they arrive.
That's true. I will tell you, of course, the man who should have been the defending champion in the marathon from a country known as Uganda, the one-time power of Africa. Now we'll pause for a short break, and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the Social Networking website, Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka, that's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Africa 2016 Olympics. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111, U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question, keep your comment brief, and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gizui Yuwat, and of course this is Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington. Good afternoon, Henok.
Hello, Chaka.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Terrific. Your impressions of the Rio Games, did you watch them? Did you enjoy them?
Well, I had a couple of free time to watch basketball. That's my favorite game. Uh-huh. And I was hoping that the game was about to be more competent, but unfortunately, it's the U.S. had too much of a leverage over other countries in the game, obviously, for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. But it was very interesting. So I watched the last game of the basketball where Carmelo Anthony took a lead in shooting. And so that was very interesting. And also I watched some of the races, including, of course, the marathon itself. Mm-hmm. At some point, you understand that African athletes had a good time competing and in the other kinds of sports at the Olympic. It's a brand new event or sport for Africans, so we did not manage to even attend or participate in some of these newly created sport events. So you see that African countries are really foreign and alien to some kind of sports, and to some kind of sport they are not. So there is no uniform participation that you see. That was my general observation within a limited period of time that I had the opportunity to watch the game.
Now, Henok, let me ask you a question about basketball before we move on to some other games and perhaps specifically the marathon. I'm sure you're waiting for that. What about the talk that a lot of countries across the world had, in fact, caught up with the Americans? What happened? It looks like, frankly, the Americans continue to dominate.
There is clear reason for this. I mean, basketball is one of the hardcore of American value. And there is a very strong institutional nurturing for this game. Because you see in the U.S., sport is not only understood as a fun thing to do, it's also the backbone of the economy. It's the backbone of the investment. So you see lots of dedication, institutional dedication, more motivating people to grow into the sport, and it's become part of the blood of American and American value. So I'm not surprised why America should have a monopoly over basketball. So it's unique to the country. And also, it's surprising to see Argentina coming up with Manu Ginobili really competing. If you remember, in 2004, Argentina was the one who beat America in the final game. But since 2004, they had not the U.S. team had a monopoly over all games. So, and also, in the NBA, the National Basketball Association, you see lots of international players from different countries coming here and playing in NBA all year long. And then when they go back to their country, they play for their national team. But most of the time, it's only 1% from their national team. So I don't think they would be strong enough to compete against a well-established and a well-built American cultural game, if you would like to call it.
Talking, of course, about the Argentine basketball team having defeated the United States team, there was, of course, another Olympics, another year, back in 1972, if I remember correctly, in Munich, when the Russians pulled it off. What happened? Does this mean these two were simply flukes?
Well, I mean, I don't believe so. But if you want, basketball, the way it's evolving now here in the U.S., the way it's evolving now in the U.S. is that there are different NBA rules and more friendly to the game rules that helped the Americans to just more grow the game, and also the politics of the era or the politics of the century might be an important factor to speak into this. Maybe back in the days when Russia was more stronger, and it's not Russia, it was a USSR with a more consolidated, not fragmented power. Maybe that might have been one of the reasons for them to pull it off. And now you see the Russian participation in the basketball is just really minimal, and I don't even know if they're in the league, but I'm not exactly sure about this. So the game also goes with the politics. If you have a good politics, there is a good chance that you might have a good game or a good team, because most of the time you see players in a game or in a team don't only like luxury life, but also they like a free psychology, you know, they like good freedom. So when you have a good politics, you have the ability to attract good players. So given the kind of authoritarian nature of some of these countries, which Russia might be one of them, I believe the possibility to nurture, the possibility to get the best out of your players might not be there. So that's how national teams are built, right? So that is what happened, I think.
Henok, thank you very much, in fact, for reminding me that when we talk about 1972, we are not really talking about Russia. We are talking about the Union of the Soviet Socialist Republics. Mm-hmm. You're right.
And getting back to that 72 Olympic tournament, Shaka, the USA was not made up of NBA players back in 72. They were made up of college players.
NCAA.
In fact, Doug Collins was a member of that team, and he was calling some of the games in Rio. Mm. And they showed footage of how the USA team refused the silver medal.
Correct.
They would not go up on that podium, because the Soviets got to inbound that ball not once, not twice, three times at the end of that game. And the Americans said, we're getting robbed. We're getting robbed of the gold medal. And to this day, no members of that USA team wear a medal around their neck.
Really?
I think it hurts them to some extent.
Yeah, and then they went back, and NBA was established in 1973. Now I remember that. NBA was established in 1973. Probably that might be one of the driving factors to just regain back that monopoly, maybe.
But, basketball has evolved. Quick shout-out for Mike Krzyzewski, the outgoing coach of the USA men's team. He has led the team to three gold medals in a row.
And, of course, the coach of Duke.
Yes, so he'll go back to Duke and probably win a few more national titles.
Probably. Tell me, when I look at the results, really, looking at the report card, you're talking about Africa made up of 54 countries. 54 countries. You only have Kenya, Ethiopia, South Africa, Ivory Coast, Burundi, and Niger. Medoric, we're talking about six countries.
Well, Henock made a good point that some of these African countries, Shaka, do not devote resources to sports, maybe due to circumstances like gymnasiums or pools. Like, you didn't see a lot of Africans competing in the swimming competition mm-hmm. or gymnastics. Mm-hmm. Kenya and Ethiopia, traditionally strong in athletics. We saw West Africans in the sprints. But I think with some African teams at the Olympics, they devote their resources to specific sports.
What about the African diaspora factor? I mean, if you look from 100 meters to the marathon, really, the guys that win the gold and what have you, somehow they do have the African connection.
That's true. That's true. Huh? Meb Keflezighi, he did not medal in Rio, but he has won. He's won some medals in the past from Eritrea, yes. His family.
Yes.
And we have our friend Mo Farah.
Mo Farah.
Mo Farah.
Running for Britain. From Somalia.
That's right.
Yeah.
So yes, they have African ties, and I think it's helped them. I think it's helped them in their international running careers when they go to whether it's Britain or the United States or a European country. I think they do remember their African roots.
You know, this reminds me of the 1998 French World Cup champions led by Zidane. There were some right-wing politicians in France who said, ah, come on, man. I mean, this is not a French team. This is Africa.
That's right. That's right. A good chunk of that team was made up of players with African ties.
Very interesting. Now, talking about lack of governmental support and what have you, you had this marathon, which was being defended, the championship. In fact, the champion was supposed to be Ugandan Kiprotich. He had won the marathon championship in 2012 in the London Olympics, and some people thought it was a fluke, but he went on, in fact, even to win the world championships. I think, if I'm not wrong, it was in Moscow or
yes.
something. So this is a man who is supposed to be defending his title. He arrives in Rio de Janeiro on Monday and has to compete, frankly, in this world-class competition on a Sunday.
Yeah, that's a good point, Shaka. I think you need to acclimate to the conditions where you'll be competing. In Brazil, it was kind of rainy weather during a lot of the athletic competitions, but I think you need to get used to the climate. Whether you're from Africa or anywhere, you need to get used to what the weather conditions are. I don't know what Kiprotich's circumstances were like in terms of financial support.
Logistics and all that kind
logistics,
of stuff.
But I think you're right. I think it really helps to at least allow for a little time to get used to where you'll be running or competing or, you know, doing your specific event.
These are like guys, frankly, looking at them competing just like guys who have their hands tied behind their backs and legs tied together and are being asked to punch back.
Yeah, I agree, Shaka. I think you need a certain amount of support to perform at the highest level, at an Olympic level.
That's right. Well, you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa, and we'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. We saw tears, laughs, and a mix of various other emotions during the Summer Olympics. How exciting that was with all the ups and downs that came with it. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the fantastic feedback we've received from our audience through social media. Well, stay with us.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui Ewart, and of course, welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. 11 African nations won medals at the just-concluded Rio 2016 Summer Games. Kenya topped the list with 13 medals, including 6 gold, 6 silver, and 1 bronze, putting a huge smile on the faces of my colleagues, Vincent Mokori and Esther Githui Ewart. Other athletes from South Africa, Ethiopia, Ivory Coast, Algeria, Egypt, Tunisia, Nigeria, Burundi, Niger, and Morocco all won medals at the Rio Games as well. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, how excited were you over the performance of African athletes at the Rio Summer Games? Well, let's start our conversation with a fan from Uganda who submitted our letter of the week.
Stephen Downey Mbanawe from Uganda writes, I was happy about the performance of the Kenyans and an athlete from Ivory Coast who won gold. However, I was not happy about the overall performance of Africans. I think Africa should wake up and make sports a priority and a potential source of income for people. I congratulate those who participated in the Olympics, especially my fellow countrymen. I believe African states have a long way to go as far as sports is concerned.
Well, that was Stephen who reacted from Uganda. We'll move on to our Twitter comments. But before that, a quick reminder that while we start our conversation before the show, it continues during and even after the show. It's another way of just saying that we are tweeting live today. Just use the hashtag VOA Africa 2016 Olympics. And if you haven't yet, do follow us at VOA Shaka. Speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Ivan Karuru, who says that he's glad that they represented our continent. We are proud of them. We have another tweet from Petra Isaac in Tanzania, who says, I'm impressed by the African athletes for Olympic competition, but in Tanzania, we need more practice. Now to a comment from Facebook, this time it's Vincent Atuma in Asaba, Nigeria, who says that Nigeria managed to win just one medal, a bronze medal awarded to the men's football team. Obviously, our preparation for the games was grossly inadequate, and we have not learned our lesson from previous woeful Olympic outings. Nigerian athletes were in Rio only to participate and not to compete. Well, we had some positive feedback. This last one is has a very tough criticism, and I think you touched on that, Sunny and Shaka. Well, your take on these comments?
Enoch, your reaction.
Well, that's a perfect capturing, actually, by saying that Africans are participating but not competing is something that is really moving. This sense of urgency to build and capitalize on what you have and psychologically empower your team, that I don't think was present in some of this competition. And there is a reason for it, actually, because if I always, as someone who is in the legal profession, I always look into the governance and how the Athletics Federation in some of these African countries are really handled and managed. So you see that there is no favorable ground to make them or to let them be prepared for these kind of international games. So some of these comments coming from home, from Africa, is they're really true. And we lack practice and we lack this psychological readiness to compete because there is a culture and tendency and custom to only participate and make sure that you're present, not to make sure that you're winning and on top of the game. And that's more than physical. So that's how I see.
Very interesting. Mariama, any more reaction from the social media audience, please?
Yes, we have a lot of comments, and we'll go to one from Goa Suspranic from Liberia, who writes that Africa has proven to the world that something can come out of this unique continent. Rio 2016 was indeed great. Long live Africa, long live the continent, he writes. And Joseph John Peter Kejio from South Sudan, who posted this comment on our wall, saying that my excitement grew somewhat when I saw a female Ethiopian athlete compete. Well, which one? An interesting comment, nonetheless. Shaka, and guess once again, what do you make of these thoughts?
Very interesting, Sunny. Maybe he's referring to Alimaz Ayana, who broke the world record by huge.
Fantastic achievement by her, Shaka, in the women's 10,000 meters final. She obliterated the previous record by, I think, more than 14 seconds.
Obliterated is the word. What does that mean to an average English?
Did you like that word? Crushed it. They crushed that world record. In fact, there were a lot of questions right after the race. Is she doping? But to put it in context, I think there were 18 Olympians in that race, Shaka, who set personal bests. In other words, the conditions were really good that night in Rio. Mm-hmm. There had been a rain. It was very cool. The track was fast. And the fact that these other Olympians also exceeded their previous bests says a lot. But that was one of the great African highlights in Rio.
The first word I probably heard that adjective used was back in 1968, Bob Beamon in the long jump.
Yes.
You remember?
That was another obliteration of a world record by Bob Beamon, that one was at altitude, however,
yes,
in Mexico City.
They claimed it had an aesthetic of sorts when the Kipchainos were beating the Jim Ryan in the 1500 meters and all that kind of stuff. But look, man, it has since become a norm for Kenya to do its thing.
Yes, and speaking of world records, quick shout out for that South African, Wade Van Niekerk,
yes,
in the men's 400 meters.
Yes.
That was an interesting race, Shaka, in that he set the world record from lane 8, the,
yes,
outside lane,
yes,
which tactically is not regarded as the best position to be in a race of that nature. You really want to be in one of the middle lanes so you can see on each side of you, you know, how Shaka is running.
Yes.
You can take a quick look. He really could not see who was behind him during that race. And again, he broke the record previously held by Michael Johnson of the USA.
But if I remember correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think I remember another African athletic giant, again back in 1972, Munich Olympics, by the name John Achibua from Uganda.
Uganda.
400 meters hurdles and world record time. Beating David Hemmer of Britain, the defending champion.
I knew you would get his name in, Shaka.
Very interesting, very interesting. Well, thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, I think obliterated is going to be like, if I can actually pronounce the word, I can, is going to be one of STA's favorite words. We'll put it in the STA lexicon, that's for sure. Well, this will do it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at VOA, at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com, or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa, and don't forget to follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Another reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Just go to the VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website, or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth discussion on democracy and the rule of law in Uganda. Join us next week right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back. And today, of course, it's a reflection on the politics and analysis of the African accomplishments in Rio. Our distinguished guests are my colleague, Sonny Young, host of VOA's Sunny Side of Sports, and Henok Gabisa, visiting academic fellow, Washington and Lee University School of Law, who joins us from Lexington in the U.S. state of Virginia. Well, gentlemen, again, I have to say, I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Shaka.
You're most welcome. Yeah. Henok, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, sir.
Now, tell us, man, what about this issue of politics in sports? The Olympics, of course, is proud of saying that you do not mix politics with sports. But it looks like that's not really the reality that we are seeing. Is that correct?
Well, you have to start by defining what is politics. I mean, sport itself is politics. Article 50 of the establishment document of Olympic Association says that Olympic game is a political, which is politically neutral platform, international platform, that no kind of displaying of any political gesture is allowed. That's what it says. Well, I understand the philosophical background and rationale of having that kind of phrases or articles in the constitutive document, because if you give a room of allowing any kind of political ideas to come up on this kind of platform, you would have opened a gate for flood of different kinds of causes, advocacy, political agendas, and programs being displayed at the Olympic. That's very understandable, and that's how it has to be. But sometimes, given that our daily existence is politics by itself, and also the sport and the Olympic itself is just politics itself, in a sense that it's an interrelative or an interrelated relationship between states and countries coming together and showing solidarity of existence. That's what it's all about, besides giving a kind of pleasure for people. So within that broader framework of understanding the sport itself, I am sure that very important justice issues or hardcore sensitive issues should be tolerated in this kind of international platform. Because if you see states, governments, officials, they have platforms, but we, the people, do not have that kind of interactive platform. So the only way possible for the people is just to use that narrow room to display their cause, the cause which probably they might have been suffering from for a long period of time. And to be honest with you, for African athletes, this is the best platform that sometimes should be deployed or used by our athletes to speak what is really on the ground in Africa, because there is a problem of freedom of expression, there is a problem of free flow of information in Africa. Internet has not penetrated well into African continent. So probably this is one of our opportunities to just tell the world what we practice on a daily basis.
I see.
That's what I'm not promoting for the Olympic to be political, but there has to be a balancing or there has to be an equilibrium where sensitive issues like that of the Oromo, for example, the Oromo of Ethiopia who've been suffering, should be given a pass in the Olympic. I think that's what the Olympic Committee actually did. They did not say anything to Faisal Elisa. I mean, they have frowned upon.
We will come back to that a little bit later. Let's go for a break. Of course, a reminder that you're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. To participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please, don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook. Keywords, Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui-Ewart. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Now, Sunny, you had this marathon on Sunday. I watched it live from Rio. And you had the silver medalist from Ethiopia by the name Feisa Rilesa. Rilesa crossed the finish line with his arms crossed over his head, and they say this was a sign of solidarity for the Oromo community, his ethnic community, which of course happens to be the largest ethnic community in Ethiopia, and it claims to be oppressed by the powers that be. I mean, you heard what Henoch said. Why should this really be considered to be a political statement?
I agree with what Henoch said about the Olympic stage being a great platform to put out these issues that a lot of people probably had never heard about before he made that gesture when he crossed the finish line. I wasn't aware of the plight of the Oromo people, and I applaud him for doing that. Mm-hmm. It brought back memories of 68 in Mexico City with John Carlos and Tommy Smith doing the Black Power salute on top of the medals podium.
Correct.
And I don't know if you can avoid these types of political statements, but I consider this one of the most powerful that I've seen at an Olympics.
I mean, if you look at the coverage by the media, by television, radio, and newspapers, and social media, and what have you, obviously this is huge. Now, Henoch, what makes this particular political statement by your compatriot, Feisa, huge in your view?
What really makes this very, very unique is the fact that the degree of sacrifice that the athlete made to his profession, to his career, given that Ethiopia as an authoritarian regime or as a country that is being ruled by a very dictatorial regime, in my opinion, which I believe some people agree with me, or majority of people agree with me, that there is no flow of information from this country, or there is no information that gets into this country. So the people are basically living in an island of themselves that is being facilitated by the government. When you see the harsh governance situation in the country, the penalty or the sanctions that exist or that comes following this kind of gesture, the fact that he took this high magnitude of risk to himself and displayed that shows that there has to be strong cause behind this gesture, and that's what the world is trying to scrutinize or investigate, because it came as a surprise to the people. Some people were saying, "What was he doing when he just crossed his arms? Was he just trying to say something X factor, whatever?" Or it was just a brand new windfall moment for the viewers at Rio. So the risk that he took, I think, has made the situation more memorable, more unique. And also, I was talking to one of the editor of journal, and she mentioned that I have covered in my lifetime more than 6 Olympics. I have never seen in my lifetime a committed, a courageous athlete who is determined to display solidarity with the cause that he believed in. That's what she said, and so that has captured people's attention, I think.
Of course,
some of them said this is a gold man who won silver. That's how people expressed it.
Very interesting, at least in terms of at least respect for fundamental human rights. What about the reaction from Addis Ababa? Because a government spokesman there apparently says that the country plans a heroic welcome for him, and his safety is guaranteed. Is he, to the best of your knowledge, prepared, or does he plan, in fact, to return to Addis Ababa?
Well, I'm not sure about that, but he has made himself clear to the international media's on the first day that he might not be planning to go back. That's his words. That's what he said.
Okay.
So there is no reason to doubt what he said.
Okay.
But your question that relates to the heroic welcome of the Addis Ababa for Fayisa is ridiculous. At least the reason why I said this is, as soon as Fayisa crossed the line with his hands up, you know what the national TV television channel did? In Ethiopia, we only have one TV channel. Only one TV channel for 100 million people. And that one TV channel belongs to the government. There is no other private TV channel in the country. You know what they did on the TV? They blocked or they switched that channel.
I heard about that.
They've never showed him.
I heard about that.
So,
Henok, let's go to the lifeline of the show, if you don't mind the telephone callers, because time happens not to be our best ally. Good evening, Samuel from Uganda. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Ndugushaka. How are you?
Usually terrific. Your question, Samuel.
Thank you very much for bringing my friend Sunny Young.
Mm-hmm.
My brother Sunny Young, how can Sunny Side of Sports assist in winning sponsorship of athletics academies in US and Europe to allow potential athletes to train with personalities like Usain Bolt of Jamaica, an icon in 100, 200, 4x400 meters gold winning? What advice do you give to African governments in terms of resources and investing in athletics, so that we can also have an African Usain Bolt in those distance runs? Thank you very much. And if you have more goodies, pass them over to Shaka.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah, I think
let's go first to Nigeria, yeah, and then
sure.
you respond. Good evening, Patrick. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Yeah, good evening, Mr. Shaka.
Are you have a minute, please?
Yes, Mr. Sunny Young, the sports guru of POA. Good evening.
Good evening, Patrick.
Yeah, Patrick Okorafo Farotuku here in Nigeria. Mr. Sonny Young, I want to find out from how do you see African athletes for the year 2020? Looking at the Saudi preparation in this 2016, as Mr. Shaka has just said, Mr. Shaka, to me, no politics in Rio. Many countries did not prepare very well for the Rio. Even some, you should name them. Well, let me just congratulate Nigeria for winning bronze. Thank God for that. And we did good with South Africa for that. Thank you very much. Mr. Sonny Young, it's a pleasure to have you in this program tonight. Good evening.
Go for it.
Yeah, thank you for your comments, Patrick. I'd like to see Africa do better in Tokyo in 2020. I think a lot of the comments we've heard tonight, poor preparation by Africa overall, maybe not enough financial resources for the athletes. As for an African Usain Bolt, I would suggest maybe some of these African governments can partner with our U.S. State Department. I know they have, they do a lot of sports diplomacy in Africa, and they conduct clinics and that type of thing. That would probably be the best bet in terms of sponsorship.
Enoch, you have people like Abebe Bikila, for example, who actually first won the marathon gold in Rome 1960, barefoot. And 4 years later, he defends it in Tokyo. What happened? It seems to me also that most of the great athletes in Nigeria come from the Oromo community. We're talking about Armaz Ayana, we're talking about Trudesh Dibaba, Genzebe Dibaba, Kenenisa Bekele, Mamo Wolde, and the great, of course, Abebe Bikila. What makes the Oromo athletes tick?
Well, the sad thing is that all these athletes are Oromos, but nobody knows about the Oromo. Oromo is it's more than 36 million population in Ethiopia, and they're the largest ethnic group in Ethiopia, but they've been suppressed, they're marginalized, institutionally discriminated against, but nobody knows about them, unfortunately. Now the world is getting to know them. So coming back to your question about what makes the Oromos unique in the long distance running.
You have 30 seconds, Henok.
It's the fact that all of them come from a small town called Bokoji. This Bokoji area in RC has a very good environmental friendly area. The people who come from there have adapted to the environment.
High.
So that's one of the reasons why they are.
I see. And of course, they express themselves through their feet. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, my colleague Sunny Young, host of VOA's Sunny Side of Sports, and Henok Gabisa, visiting academic fellow, Washington and Lee University School of Law. He joined us via Skype from Lexington, the U.S. state of Virginia. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Batte. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. Get better, not bitter. And of course, please remember to keep the African hopes alive.
Thank you, Shaka.
You're most welcome.